St. Red, My Aim is True by Jordan D. White. Episode 2, Miracle Man.
Of course, thought Red at the bottom of a wet and squirming pile of frogs. Of course they'd subscribe to the baptism of fire technique of training new employees. Here I am, just sainted yesterday, and they send me out on my first mission. Okay, I guess technically I wouldn't be sainted until I die, but damn, I thought I'd be waiting a lot longer for that. Sending me out, no training, no idea what I'm doing.
Don't worry,
Hayden had said.
You're one of the righteous now, son. God may not show his hand in this world anymore, but surely he protects his own interests. We are doing his work, after all. He wouldn't want anything to stop that, right? I'm sure he wouldn't. I'm sure he wouldn't.
It had been that morning when they told him, less than 24 hours since his life had been erased and he'd fallen prey to their unusual abduction. Not being used to waking up at 7 a.m., Red had sat somewhat groggily through his briefing. He was wearing one of the suits he'd found in his closet of his quarters, the quarters that had been specially furnished for what he didn't even realize he wanted yet. Apparently, Red had never realized that he wanted to wear the same thing every day, since all he was given in the way of clothes was about 20 copies of the exact same outfit. It was a black button-down shirt and dress pants, with matching bright red jacket, tie, and shoes. Red at first thought it was some kind of joke, a pun based on his name, but he had to admit, standing in front of his mirror after dressing, he did look pretty snazzy.
Besides, you won't die until you're martyred. And there's not much chance of that happening here. You'll be going to Michigan. There's a priest there we need you to look into.
A priest?
Yes. There have been a few allegations that need investigation. We need you to go check things out there. Argento will brief you on the details on the way. Good luck, Red, and God bless you.
Thanks, Red said, turning to follow Argento out the door. Georgie was at her desk playing solitaire, as she seemed to do most of the time. She smiled at Red a little nervously and said,
God bless,
as they passed. So, Red asked as he and Argento walked down the hall, what's the scoop about this minister?
His name is David Patrick. He heads up the Church of the Sacred Trinity in Grand Rapids. We'll be leaving on a flight in 1 hour.
1 hour? What airport are we leaving from?
Our own, of course.
How big is this compound?
It's big. We've already had people load up the luggage you packed this morning. I trust you're bringing more to wear this time?
Ha ha, Red said. He had packed a bag full of the same outfit he was wearing today, topped off by Allison's Christmas card. So, what are we doing here? What are these allegations we're checking out?
There are two, actually. The first is a legal one. One of the parents of the children who help out at the church accused him of molesting her son.
Oh, great. So what do I do? Go undercover and see if he'll diddle me? Just what I always wanted to be doing. The job gets better all the time. What's the second allegation?
There's some talk that he is the second coming of Christ. Here's the armory. We need to get your equipment.
He swiped an access card through the panel by the metal door they had arrived at. With a beep, it unlocked and the two men entered. Whoa, whoa, whoa! Are you telling me my first mission is to go up against Jesus?
No, absolutely not. We sincerely doubt that he is the Christ. In fact, if you find otherwise, if you believe he is Jesus, report this information immediately. If this actually is the second coming, we will have to do everything in our power to assist. But no, we believe this rumor to be untrue, and you are going to be looking for any proof to counter it. Now, your equipment.
He punched a few numbers in the keypad of a nearby safe and pulled out a rather large and expensive-looking case.
These shall be our holy implements.
When the case opened, Red could see two things within. One was a large sword in a metal scabbard, the other a handgun in a shoulder holster. I think one of these two items comes as a surprise to me, but I'm not sure which.
They are not merely what they seem. Watch.
He picked up the sword and drew it. Then he put the holster, gun, and scabbard up on the countertop, closed up the case, and put it on the floor in the center of the room.
Both of these weapons have been blessed. The blade of this sword and the bullets of that gun will cut through any object known to man.
He demonstrated on the case, swinging the sword and rending it in two as easily as swinging it through the air.
However, they will pass through any living object without doing any damage at all, like so.
He swung the blade toward his own hand, and as he promised, it passed directly through, as if it were not there, leaving it undamaged. Argento's sleeve was not so lucky. A sliver of fabric fluttered to the floor.
Damn it! Well, I nicked my sleeve. But otherwise, you can see, I am fine. As I said, the gun works in much the same way, but I shan't demonstrate it just now. Since almost nothing can stop the bullets, if I fired it here, it would continue to fly forward, breaking things until it ran out of momentum.
What do you mean, almost nothing? If it passes through any living object and breaks through anything else, what could stop it?
Other holy artifacts, some dark magics. Not many things, but you encounter them every once in a while.
So what's the point of these anyway? If I can't hurt anyone, what's the point of having weapons?
First of all, no one will necessarily know they won't be hurt by them until you've demonstrated that. But in general, we don't want to have to hurt anyone. You could break bonds, stop cars, destroy doomsday devices, any number of things.
You get a lot of doomsday devices?
Not too many yet.
That's good.
They're mostly around New Year's. Now, put these on.
Argento sheathed the blade and handed over the weapons to Red. He took the shoulder holster first and slid it over his arms. Once it was in place, it disappeared. Jeez, what happened?
Another of its properties. It belongs to you now. You will never be without it. None can see it or feel it, including you, but if you reach for where the gun should be...
Red tried it and was surprised to feel the handle of the gun in his hands. He pulled it from the holster and examined it. Wow, I don't believe that actually worked. The holster was still seemingly not there, and when Red attempted to replace the gun, he found that it was gone once more.
The same will be true for the sword here.
He held the strap open for Red to slip his arm through. It, too, vanished.
It's up behind your right shoulder.
Red reached up and felt the hilt in his palm, but he left the blade in place. So, I can just pull these out of nowhere whenever I want to slice through anything without hurting anyone?
That's what they're there for. Let's get moving.
Argento led the way out of the room.
Of course, as you know, DINR appreciates that you do not reveal your mission or the existence of our organization, so do try to be discreet about it when you do. Red?
Red had not left the armory yet. Argento caught the door and re-entered the room.
Red?
Red was brandishing his sword and hacking a chair into bits. Sorry, it just sounded so cool, I couldn't wait.
It's okay, I suppose. It is sort of neat.
Red smiled at Argento. You're coming with me then, eh?
I'm to be your liaison with the firm. I'll be going with you for all of your missions, doing reports for the company, helping you out in any way I can.
So we're partners?
I suppose, for now. You'll be doing the harder parts of the work, though, so it's a bit of an unequal partnership.
What do I call you?
Pardon?
Do I call you Argento all the time? You said your first name was Frank?
Francis. I suppose you can call me what you like.
Can I call you Frank?
I suppose so.
All right then, Frank. Let's go to Missouri.
Michigan.
Whatever. And they did. It was a private jet, and therefore about as comfortable as air travel can get, but Red still shifted uneasily during the flight. Argento fell asleep next to him, listening to a CD compilation of 80s music on a pair of headphones. Every once in a while, Red could make out Our House or Weird Science for a moment, but then it would fade back into indistinction. Red wished he could have slept as well, but thinking about where he was and what he was doing kept him fairly wired. Argento had given him the file on Patrick to look over during the flight. According to sources in the area, Patrick had been healing sick children with his touch for the past year or so. He did not claim to want any publicity or money in return, which is why he'd asked no one to tell the press. All he asked was that the children he healed do volunteer work at the church after they recovered. No one questioned the fact that almost every child he had helped was male, and that none were unattractive or overweight. Flash forward to a few weeks ago, one of the parents of the saved children starts to get suspicious. They make a public allegation, but no one will corroborate. The kids all deny everything, and the parents, there is no doubt in the parents' minds that this man saved their children's lives. They had cancer, leukemia, brittle bone syndrome, you name it, and now nothing, not a trace. Ever since the allegations failed to stick, he'd been healing more children, even some adults. That was when he'd started claiming to be more and more powerful. That's when the talk of Jesus began among some of the congregation. The hotel they had been booked into was a decent one. They were sharing a room with two king-size beds, but it was much larger than any hotel room Red had ever been in. He chose the bed on the right and put his suitcase on it. He hung all of his suits in the closet and put his Christmas card in the drawer by his bedside, trying, successfully, to keep Argento from noticing that he'd brought it. Okay, Frank, he said, flopping onto the bed. Pop quiz. You're in Michigan. It's still before noon, and you've got a child-molesting messiah to bust. What do you do?
First of all, we sincerely doubt he is the messiah, as I told you. Secondly, I know exactly what I'm going to do, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, here it is. Moulin Rouge is on one of the pay-per-view channels, and I have heard it's quite good.
We rushed all the way here to watch movies.
No. We rushed out here so you could investigate David Patrick.
So I have to do it alone?
Do you not listen when I tell you things, or do I mumble? Yes, you go it alone. I am your liaison. I brief you, give you any counsel I can offer. Debrief you when you're done and submit a report to Hayden. I told you it was not a fair partnership.
No, I distinctly remember you saying you would help out in any way you can.
Well, considering that you are a saint and I am a paper pusher, that is any way I can.
Great. Just great. What the hell am I supposed to do while you're watching Nicole Kidman strip?
I recommend that after a bit of lunch you go to the Church of the Sacred Trinity for some reconnaissance. Anything you can find out about Father Patrick is sure to come in handy. Does Nicole Kidman actually appear nude in... Well, I suppose we'll both find something interesting out this afternoon.
For some reason, Red had been imagining that the church would be a stone cathedral-like building, with huge stained glass images and spires, maybe even a flying buttress or two. In actuality, it was a much more modern affair. It was about 2, maybe 3 stories tall, was rectangular in shape, had brick walls, and a white roof that sloped down from the middle. It was both long and wide, although longer than wide, had a huge parking lot along its right side, and a large quantity of lawn on the left. A large white cross hung over the main doors. Red was still pretty much worn out from lack of sleep, so he tried the direct approach first. He went in the main doors. After the anteroom with coat racks and such, he entered, of course, into the main hall. As one might expect, it was a large hall with a long center aisle separating pews on either side. The walls were lined with the Stations of the Cross. The altar featured a large crucified Jesus mounted on a cross, which was in turn mounted on the wall. There were a great number of candles on either side of the altar, all lit. Red dipped his finger in the basin of water next to the door and touched it to his head. He saw a confessional over on the left side of the altar, near a doorway leading further into the building. The light was on above both doors, so Red walked up and sat in the nearest pew. It felt good to be off his feet. He only had a moment to relax, though, before a balding 40-something man came out of the sinner's side box, holding his baseball cap in his hand. As he knelt and crossed himself before leaving, Red entered the booth. The first thing he noticed upon closing the door was that the screen between him and the father next to him was different from the others he'd seen as a child. Instead of the two of them being completely cut off from one another, there was a small opening, like the type found in a ticket booth, where you'd exchange money for tickets.
"Welcome, my son,"
came the voice of the confession taker.
"Do you have anything you'd like to tell me?"
"Yes, father," said Red, trying to think of something to confess. It had seemed like a good idea to come in here at the time, but now that he'd done it, he had no idea what to say. I've sinned, I guess."
"Don't worry, my son. We all sin. That's why we must confess and make amends. What would you like to tell me?"
"Well, I've been lazy. I used to, you know, just kind of sit around and stuff. I've got a job now, though, so, you know, I think that'll, stop that."
"That's good, my son. Anything more?"
"Yeah, I guess I, you know, masturbate a lot. You know, I mean, touch myself, impurely."
"And what do you think of when you touch yourself?"
"Well, girls."
"Young girls?"
"Yeah, I guess, yeah."
"How young?"
"Pretty young, I guess. I mean, they're not... Oh, well, very young."
"Underage?"
"Yeah, underage mostly, yeah."
"And what do you imagine doing with them?"
"Well, you know, I just, you know, just the regular old,
Sex?"
"Yeah, hey, I guess so, yeah."
"My son, you do realize this is a serious sin against both God and nature."
"Well, yeah, sure I do. That's why I'm here, you know, forgiveness and all."
"The first thing I recommend, my son, is that you donate yourself to the church, not just your money, but your time as well. We have many church events, especially dealing with the children, and we could use people like you helping us out. This congregation, my flock, we are headed for bigger things all the time, and we need people like you, people who understand these urges, these impure, unnatural thoughts that God has put in all of us, tempting us all the while toward the side of the serpent. We need people like you to volunteer and help out."
Red sat there for a moment. "Okay, Father, I'll definitely look into it. Check the schedule and all. Thanks." A Bible was placed in the opening between the booths.
"Now put your hand on the good book, my son, and I shall absolve you of the sin."
Red placed his hand on the Bible and felt the priest put his hand atop them both. At first, Red felt nothing other than the uncomfortableness of being touched by the man. Then he noticed how much better he felt. He was no longer tired. His body did not ache from exhaustion. He smiled for a moment. Then the voice said,
"Good heavens, a saint!"
Red yanked his hand out of the man's grasp, leapt from the booth, and booked up the left side of the hall. He heard Father Patrick yell,
"Wait!"
as he broke from his half of the confessional to pursue. When Red reached the main doors, he kicked over a basin of holy water, hoping that it would either trip up Patrick or make him slip. He also ran smack into a man on his way into the church, and with a brief, "Excuse me," tossed him aside and reached the outdoors. At least one of the obstacles must have worked, because it seemed to Red that he had a pretty good head start as he ran the length of the parking lot. Out of the corner of his eye, he noticed a dump truck pulling into the lot. When he reached the back corner of the building, he turned and ran behind it, Patrick having just made it around to the side. He noticed an opening hatchway into the basement level of the building. He jumped within. The room within held no furniture. Aside from the hatch he'd come in through, only one door. Red tried the door. It was locked. He didn't want to risk climbing back out, so for the moment, a feverishly frightened Red clung as close as he could to the wall near the hatchway, hoping he could stay out of sight. The beeping was getting louder. Two sets of running footsteps approached and slowed.
"Hey, did you see a guy run this way?"
I don't think so."
"All right. You go check the curves on the lot. I'll continue to run this way."
The beeping stopped.
Am I lined up?"
"You're all set."
Red heard Father Patrick run off around the building. He breathed a sigh of relief as the mechanical sound began quite loudly. A second later, the truck was dumping its payload, a humongous quantity of frogs, down the hatchway on top of him. Red's first instinct, of course, was to jump up screaming and shake the filthy things off of him. After a moment's consideration, brought on by his inability to move easily due to being buried in frogs, he realized that it might have brought a bit more attention to him than he would have liked. He tested to see if he could breathe. He could, although he did not particularly enjoy the bouquet, and decided to lay low beneath the beast until he was relatively sure it was safe. Through the ribbiting din of the wriggling mass, he could only make out a mumble of voices from outside. The clanging shut of the hatch came much more clearly, and after a bit of effort, he poked his head up from the pile. Not being very good at estimation, Red could not have guessed how many frogs were in the room with him. He was about waist deep in them, but the pile was much shallower on the side of the room away from the hatch, where the door was. He waded his way over there and tried the door again. It was still locked, not that he had expected it to change, really. He leaned up against the wall in defeat for a moment, scratching his head, when his hand felt something hard behind his right shoulder. His sword. He drew his sword and slashed right through the door with no effort at all. It cleft the door in two and made big gashes in the walls on either side as well. Then, trying not to make too much noise, he gently pulled the fractured door down and set it on as few frogs as he could manage. By the time he turned back to the doorframe, many of his green fellow prisoners were making a break down the hall. He sheathed his sword and crept after them. At the end of the hall was a stairway. Red waited at the bottom of it for a moment, listening, and then mounted them. He was, after all, below ground. It was far more likely he could find a way out on the first floor. When he reached the top of the stairs, however, a familiar voice, that of Father Patrick, came echoing down the hall.
We need to find him!
Red ducked into the first room he saw. Once inside, he realized it was Father Patrick's chambers. He suppressed a squeal of dread and leapt into the closet. Father Patrick and whomever he was talking with entered the room and closed the door.
He's either with us or against us. We need to know which as soon as possible. Then we can deal with him accordingly. Give him the description to everyone. The moment anyone in the congregation sees him, I want to know about it. Now go.
Yes, my lord.
The door opened and shut once more. Red knelt down to chance a peek through the keyhole, but all he could see from his angle was an empty chair. A sound off in the distance caught Red's attention. A croak. It had caught Father Patrick's as well, for his door opened a moment later.
What the devil? Simon?
Yes, lord?
Simon, the plague of frogs is supposed to rain from above, not hop up from the basement. What are all these frogs doing loose?
I don't know, my lord. I can go check.
Please do, and keep the damn things hidden. If anyone knows about them beforehand, it's not going to be much of a miracle now, is it?
No, lord. I'm sorry, lord.
Clean them up and then tell me what happened down there.
Red was fairly certain the wall he was leaning against was the outer wall. Unless it was the wall to his right. He was pretty certain it wasn't the one to his left. He tried to remember exactly which way he had gone since entering the building. Right, then up, sort of around, and the last bit confused him. He was reasonably certain it was the wall behind him. Almost 100%, it was pretty much assured. He drew his sword, quietly, mind you, and cut a hole through the wall, leaning into it, to push himself and the wall through the newly made hole. He toppled into the floor amidst many shrieks of surprise and exclamation. Around him were many young teen and preteen girls in various states of changing from their school clothes to their church garb. Red covered his ears as their shrill assaulted him. A second later, Father Patrick burst into the room.
Your Holiness, I should have guessed I'd find you here.
End of episode 2.